Our guest today holds a Bachelor of Science in Psychonomics and a Master of Science in Cognitive Neuroscience. He earned both degrees at the University of Amsterdam. He previously worked as a neuroscientist before leaving academia to become the VP of Product at JITLab, the world's largest all-remote company, where he hired talent in 67 different countries. He is a sought-after presenter, speaking on topics related to scaling a remote-first startup, remote culture, and the future of work. In his main job, he is the CEO and co-founder of Remote, a company that empowers other companies of all sizes to pay and manage full-time and contract workers around the world, no matter where they live and work.
For more than 5.5 years, we have been looking at how work strengthens people instead of weakening them. In more than 360 conversations, we've talked to over 400 people about what has changed for them and what needs to change for the future. We are quite sure that it is important right now, because the idea of new work was developed during a real crisis. Knowing how to work remotely is not new work on its own, but what we all learned through the corona crisis can be an important accelerator on the way towards the future of work. We are looking for methods, role models, experiences, tools and ideas that bring us closer to the core of new work. In addition, from the very beginning, we have been concerned with the question of whether all people can really find and live what they really, really want in their innermost being. You are at On the Way to New Work today with Joop van der Voort.
Thanks for having me.
Now we're on. Good morning.
Hi, Joop.
This podcast is sent on Monday morning. This is Monday morning, as we can tell. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Where are you right now? Where do we get contact with you? And are you in Amsterdam?
I live in a little suburb close to Amsterdam. This is where I spent vast majority of my time, in my little home office.
Very good. Christoph.
I mean, Joop, you are the man. Before we come to the main question, at GitLab, I know that you guys are very familiar with the way of asynchronous communication, and I really have a hard time explaining people what it is. And I spent most of my time in the last 7 years to like bring that to people, so we will definitely talk about that topic as well. But before we get to that, and also to the question how you got such a nice domain like remote.com, we have to ask you the question of questions, which is, how did you become the person that you are today?
That's a good question. I had a very easy childhood. I have two very normal parents, a very normal upbringing in, you know, a suburb not that far from here. My mother taught in primary school. My father worked at the same company his entire life until he retired a few years ago. That's the foundation of who I am. I had very mature, emotionally mature parents that made me very, that made my life very, very easy. My whole life, I just did one thing, which is I tried to do what I feel is either most important or most fun, or falls somewhere in between the two of them, which led me when I was young to do a whole bunch of jobs. I brought newspapers around. I worked in a, you know, grocery store, filling the shelves, all sorts of things. And eventually it led me to figure out, why are we the way we are, right? And that's why I studied psychology. And when I realized that we don't really understand why, like, you know, our methods are very limited, I figured, well, I should study the brain, because that's where it all comes from. And then while I was doing that, I quickly figured out that we have no idea, and we're nowhere close to figuring out where we are. And so I ended up leaving that to try to find other ways to make people happy at the very least. I did a lot of different things over my life. I'm not that old. I'm 33. So, but I had the opportunity to you know, do a lot of research, very die-hard neuroscience, fundamental neuroscience work. I've had the pleasure of meeting the love of my life and having two small kids, and all those things together, I think, make me who I am today.
Very nice. Before we get into the core of asking you how you got remote.com, I think it's an interesting question. Maybe we start with your education. So what was the reason, the deep feeling inside of you to study this? And what do you think could you bring to the table of future of work with these learnings? We believe that this is such a crucial discipline and that all companies need to face the problems that many people have with many crises we are facing and psychological issues, health issues, mental issues are on the rise. Maybe, again, too many questions at once, but maybe you can, we start with your education and how it helps you to do your job.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't really recall why I chose. So I started out studying psychology, and this is what I was saying. I quickly realized that the only way we understand human behavior through psychology is by, you know, doing surveys with people and observing them. And I thought that was a really poor way of doing research. I started to specialize in neuropsychology or psychonomics, as they called it. And from there, I figured that, you know, the only true way for us to understand the way people work, and ultimately, like, if we want to have the maximum impact, what we would want to do is to recreate a brain, right? Which is, I think, very apt now that we live in, like, the last few months where AI suddenly is becoming a real thing instead of just an imaginary thing. And so I studied fundamental neuroscience to try to understand how the brain works so that in the hope we could one day recreate one and maybe have as much of an impact on the world as possible through that, right? The moment you can recreate one, you can do a lot more. You know, very directly, it doesn't help me think about the future of work, but I think what it did give me is the ability to, one, start from very much from first principles. We don't understand how the brain works. And so you have to take a very, your approach has to be very focused on, well, if we don't know, we cannot make too many assumptions. And we have to start from a very, very beginning, like forgetting anything that we knew in the past. And very much, if you look at neuroscience today, we know a lot, but fundamentally, we can't really say, well, this is how consciousness is, right? Like, we don't know it. It's like, we don't really don't know. We genuinely don't know it. And the other thing that it gave me was just the ability. I had this principal investigator that led the lab that I worked at last before I left science. And he used to say, well, you really have to know your shit. You really have to understand if you are working on something, if you're researching something, or if you're reading a paper, there's a big difference between reading it once and deeply understanding something. And that is something that I carried through my whole life. One of our board members calls it seeking for truth, that my co-founder Marcelo and I are always seeking for truth, which is trying to truly understand the underlying reason for whatever we're doing. And this is one of the reasons why I had a job in an office at one point, and I didn't genuinely understand why I needed to be in the office. I still don't. But that's a good start, right? That's a good place to start from if you're thinking about, well, what should the future look like if you're able to say, well, I don't meaningfully understand why we do the behaviors we have today and how we can go beyond from there.
When you started your company, you already had, I think it was 1 year, your podcast. Very interesting, because you many people do it the other way around. They start a company and then they create a content philosophy around the idea. You did the other way around. You produced content in the beginning and then started your company. What was your first learnings in the first year about remote work, and what did you take out of this, what you led then to the product?
Yeah, it was not so much a podcast. It was that, you know, the company I was working for, GitLab, I joined from the very beginning, and it was a fully remote organization, fully distributed, right? And there, our approach was not, oh, we are going to be highly opinionated about building a distributed remote company. It was just that was much easier to do. It would be much more work to open an office and try to bring everybody in the same location than the other way around. And while doing that, we figured out that not only does it work really well to build a company in this way, it works better for essentially everybody involved, right? The company as a whole, for each individual, for themselves, with very few downsides. And so I started the podcast specifically talking about that because I think, you know, we built software at GitLab that had nothing to do with remote work. But at the same time, I think my greatest takeaway from the time was exactly that, is that this remote work thing, it is not just doable, it is a huge shift in the way we think about work, the way we typically have done work. And it should, the more I spent time thinking about it, the more I spoke with individuals about it, the more I realized that this was a universal thing. It was not unique to us. It was not unique to the company. This could be a massive benefit to virtually anybody on the planet. It's just why don't people do this yet? And what we found out was like that the only reason we're not doing this yet is because, you know, change takes time, not any particular reason in of itself.
Und hier kommt die Werbung. Gleich geht's weiter mit On the Way to New Work. Bleibt dran, unser Werbepartner diese Woche ist niemand Geringeres als Sage. Für Sage durfte ich auch schon mal auf der Bühne stehen. Ein spannendes Unternehmen, solltet ihr euch immer anschauen. Aber hier geht's um eine wirklich spannende Studie, die Sage rausgebracht hat. Nämlich die HR-Trends, also quasi die Zukunft des Personalwesens, der Personalarbeit. Also alles, was man für HR in Zukunft wissen sollte. Und hier geht's um tiefgehende Einblicke in die aktuellen und zukünftigen Herausforderungen eben im HR. Beispielsweise aus der Studie hier mal ein kleiner Fact, den ich sehr spannend fand. 78% der HR-Führungskräfte glauben, dass der Einsatz von künstlicher Intelligenz bei den HR-Aufgaben in Zukunft viel Zeit einsparen könnte. Oder 79% sind überzeugt davon, dass HR-Prozesse in ihrem Unternehmen stärker automatisiert werden können, um die Effizienz zu steigern. Ich finde es deswegen spannend, weil ich auch schon Anfang des Jahres gesagt habe, das wird das Jahr der Automatisierung und KI ist dazu wichtig. Und wenn ihr da weiter einsteigen wollt in das Thema, dann solltet ihr euch unbedingt die Studie runterladen. Das Ganze findet ihr kostenlos auf Sage, geschrieben S-A-G-E, also www.sage.de/HR, S-A-G-E geschrieben. Und was muss man noch wissen? Sage hat sich zur Aufgabe gemacht, KMUs bei der Bewältigung ihrer HR-spezifischen Herausforderungen durch innovative Softwarelösungen zu unterstützen. Das heißt, diese Lösungen helfen euch dabei, Geschäftsprozesse zu vereinfachen, zu automatisieren, was eben eine viel effizientere und effektive Personalverwaltung ermöglicht. Damit habt ihr dann mehr Zeit für die wirklich wichtigen Themen, anstatt einfach nur Prozesse zu managen. Also, schaut euch das Ganze an. Hier geht es aber erstmal um HR-Trends, die Studie auf www.sage.de/HR. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Rest der Folge von On the Way to New Work.
And that would be exactly the thought that I had on my mind. I 100% agree. I mean, truly believer in remote work. I can see you have a setup camera-wise that works like that. We have the same here in the studio, like for every employee, so they can switch between whatever they want. We train them and keeping eye contact and all that stuff with the camera. But still, the challenge is not the technology or that it's possible. The challenge is what you like actually pointed out before when it comes to the underlying truth is the behavior of people. So from that experience, I would be curious to find out your perspective on that. Like, will we ever be able to truly shift to a remote first world, or will we always go with the challenges of taking people along? And what are these big challenges like taking people along?
I don't think the future is a world where every company is remote first, right? I think there's a place for offices, but I think that place should be significantly smaller than what it is today. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as much about, you know, how do we reach that world. I think it's more about the leverage and the choice individuals had and have nowadays, and how that will drive how companies operate over time, and then the methods and like the products that you need for that, the software that you need for that, all of that is secondary, right? Because I think the primary thing is that individuals will seek more flexibility, they will seek greater freedom, mm-hmm. and then the rest is just it's just a matter of time before we figure it out. But in like it is not in of itself that big of an obstacle in my mind. right? Very simple things like making sure you have an ergonomic workspace, for example, right? Or that you have stable internet, or that it's, you know, easy to do a video call with each other. All of those things are things that we will eventually solve for everybody to a degree that is good enough, right? And you don't need this whole elaborate setup that that we have. I think the only thing that will drive the change will be just the need for individuals to want more flexibility. And I think today they have the choice, right? And the choice is still very much constrained because the number of positions available for people that work remotely are still significantly smaller than those for people that work in an office for jobs where that is possible. But because the intent is there, right? And we have elaborate data on this. The intent is there of the majority of people to seek this kind of work means that there will always be an opportunity for employers to say, well, let me open the door for all these talented people. And for them, it will be easier to grow and to be more successful. So it's a virtuous cycle. It's just that that's a really slow cycle because, you know, people take years to change jobs and employers take years to get out of office spaces.
You mentioned the magic word flexibility here. And I used to talk about flexibility a lot because to me, this is the connecting point between new work and digital transformation. It's like number one aim for many people is flexibility. So first, you need to define what you mean by that for everyone. Like everyone needs to do that on their own. But on the other hand, one big part of flexibility is also this asynchronous type of work where you have the chance to react whenever you choose to react. So I would be curious to know, what are your learnings from GitLab? Because I know that this is a big, big, big concept, not just using a camera to work remote, but the philosophy behind asynchronous work a little bit from your perspective, because I think I can learn a lot today, this Monday morning here.
Fundamentally, the idea behind asynchronous work is so that you don't have to interrupt each other, right? That's it. And if you don't have to interrupt each other for whatever reason, it also means that you become more flexible in time, because then I am not required to be online when you are online, just so you can do your job. And the way you do it is pretty straightforward, is you write stuff down and you make sure it is accessible to everybody. So if I have a particular learning, I write it down in a place that we both know is a place where I write down these particular learnings or where I keep my status updates, etc. I think the thing that we saw at GitLab that made this really possible is, one, is to not overcomplicate it, right? Create what we call a single source of truth, a single place for a particular type of information to live that everybody agrees on, but also everybody has access to, can easily search through, and it can easily edit, right? You want to have the threshold to contribute, but also to find information to be as low as possible. The harder you make it, the less people will actually contribute. The less people will actually go back to it and search for it. I think that is one of the most important things. And the second one is to not rely on asynchronous work when it is inconvenient. As in, if you are a small team and you like to just chat with each other and be together, then that's fine too, right? Like, you can't be dogmatic about it, because if you're dogmatic about it, several things will happen. One is people become resistant to working asynchronously, or specifically to writing stuff down, and you don't want that. And two, you might run into the problem of creating too much information, right? And you create a lot of entropy, right? If you really insist that every single thing is written down, or for example, one thing that we don't do, but you can do it quite easily nowadays, is you could record all meetings and save all transcripts of all meetings. Yeah, you could do that, but like, there's a massive amount of information, but the key piece of information is only the summary, or at most the conclusion coming out of a particular meeting. So I would say that is one of the most important ones. At remote, we have a few simple tricks to like make sure we do this well. One is, you know, the single source of truth. Everybody uses the same store. Everybody makes it easy to write things down and makes it easy to find things. But one of the tricks is, we have the 20-second rule, is that before you ask somebody a question in your team for any piece of information, you have to search for 20 seconds. 20 seconds is short enough that you can't really say, I don't have time for that. But it's long enough for you to actually find most things, assuming that your information is somewhat well-structured and it's somewhat well-searchable. That has been an incredible change within our business. Once we said, okay, you have to take 20 seconds before you interrupt somebody. And another key learning is that chat is not necessarily asynchronous, right? Mm. If we are in Slack, for example, and I send you a message and I say, what is the status of this thing? That is not actually asynchronous because you get a notification, right? Like, and the message is ephemeral. It disappears. Especially what you should do is use public channels for these kind of things. It will disappear in time and it doesn't help anybody else. That's another one where you have to be very careful about using chat specifically and saying, oh, we work asynchronous. No, but that's not really true. If, you know, the person that wakes up 8 hours later than you would have to search through all of the chat to figure something out. That's not true asynchronous work.
How much do you give to people in terms of responsibility when it comes to, turning notifications off and so on? Because this is also something that is psychologically underneath, and like people take out their phone, have notifications on demand, like a sound pling, pling here and there, which is really annoying. And how much training do you like put to that?
Some, not a lot. I think it's just a core skill that you learn over time as you work remotely, and one that you have to take responsibility yourself. I think one of the best ways to do this is just to go through this and find what works for you. Again, like I think being very dogmatic about the way you do things is not helpful for everyone. Right. So, for example, I am on the extremist side of notification. I have zero notifications. For nothing, I have a notification. Mm. I never want to be interrupted by a notification. But I know that for many people, that is very different. And they do want to be notified. Mm. And they do like to work in that way. And so I like to put the responsibility for that, similar to, you know, work-life separation with the individual. I don't think it's the responsibility for the employer. I think it's important that you gain those skills and that you spend time on those. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that you, as an individual, have a great manager who makes sure that you are not always working. But for the most part, I want to put that responsibility with the individual. I think it's a core skill that if you haven't gained it, it's worthwhile spending time on and teaching yourself, how do I disconnect from work? How do I make sure that when I'm doing work, I'm able to focus? Because the implementation of whatever it is that you're going to do is not difficult, right? Mm. It's a matter of taking the decision of saying, well, I don't want to be interrupted, or taking the decision, well, I feel like I'm unfocused. How can I make sure that I focus? But what might work for me might not work for you, and vice versa. And so I think an employer shouldn't be too busy with this. And I think they should be focused on, you know, creating the scaffolding for great documentation, creating the scaffolding for low threshold communication, creating the scaffolding for making sure there's a single source of truth and that it's searchable, but not so much for optimizing for individuals.
I want to pitch one thing from my experience in terms of flexibility, and we call it also like having the freedom, as much freedom as you want to organize your stuff, as long as you don't take away other people's freedom. Yeah. And we came up in 2014 or 13 or something, where notifications started to like really take over a lot, that I said, okay, there is this urban legend of this hot wire, the red telephone between the Kremlin and the White House, which is an urban legend, as we know. There's Twitter in reality, but it's a good idea, technically, saying it wasn't me sending the nukes. So we said, and we have in Slack a little red phone. It's called the 2x call rule, because most of the smartphones these days, like, they actually go on notification when you call twice in a row. So this accounts for everyone in our company. And we teach it to people outside of the company. And I lately had that, being on stage, 100 people, and the kindergarten called from my son twice in a row. I'm like, fuck, that's an emergency. And I said, like, on stage, sorry, this is an emergency call. I will, like, 2x call. I will tell you in a second what it is. And it was my son. He's like, he told, actually, them, you have to call my dad twice, because I'm with my dad right now. He have to call him twice. I mean, and he's young. If he can do that in kindergarten, and this frees you from looking at notifications, and for us, it helps to synchronize above the whole company, just in case you have the feeling, I would be able to reach Michael, for example, if I really, really need him, he would know it's a 2x call rule. But you need everyone to like agree on it, kind of, because, yeah, this is how we synchronize it.
Mm. That's great.
I want to challenge this. You two guys seem to be very disciplined. I switched off my notifications as well. But I'm so curious that I look at my phone very often without notifications. And Nir Eyal, behavioral scientist we had on our show as well, told us that almost 90% is internal. It's not the notification. It's that people are getting bored or distract themselves, are not able to focus on their work. We hear from, I think it's not allowed in Germany, but we hear from entrepreneurs that people working from home, watching Netflix during their day work time to an extent where you ask yourself, well, does this really work? So my question is, the two of you are in this new world. I would set up a company with you guys on a remote first basis in a minute. But there are so many people who are not able to use this as wisely as you. Or is this just talking, offering old white men?
I mean, I think people have to learn how to work remotely. But I don't think it's, as I was saying, I don't think that is, it might be individually challenging to overcome that. But I, you know, if you start working for me, right, as an employee, I make very clear what I expect of you. And then it's up to you to figure out how to get to that point. And if you feel for whatever reason you're not able to get that, either because you're too distracted or you tend to procrastinate too much on whatever way that is, then that is a problem that I can help you as your manager. I can help you coach through and find ways to deal with. But in the end, it's your responsibility to do so. Right. I think the same goes for, you know, if you are in an office setting, if the only thing that keeps you busy is the pressure that other people can see your screen, and then you get your own office and you spend all day on your phone. Like that is, you know, that's the same problem. And it is not unique to working remotely, I think. And you should be able to work through this.
Yeah.
And I would challenge it from another side.
Okay.
Because I know your background. Michael has been the global head for Audi brand as the youngest manager being responsible for the brand Audi, the car brand. So this is the connection I want to make, because let's assume there are some people out there who make an emotional connection to their car. What does connect them? It's the color. It's how you individualize it, how you sit. It's the texture when you sit down and all that stuff. If you take out your phone or your work tools that you work with, and I quite assume that we all sit in front of an Apple, we all have an iPhone here lying around, so we are all this kind of connected people. If you take it out of the box and you don't do anything to it to individualize it except for choosing the color, which is kind of boring because there are just five to choose from, then you don't build an emotional connection. If you let the emotional connection be built by the device because it gives you the notification instead of you make it for yourself, it goes the other way around. So I would say it helps to have work devices that you are emotionally connected with, because it's what you navigate through the day, like with your car, you navigate through the day. And it's fun to like build a connection, but you have to invest some time to do that. And many people say, no, I'm not tech savvy. I don't want to do with that. And then I always come and say, okay, give me your iPhone. take another one, but give me your iPhone. That's what I say. But I know I'm very black and white here.
Yeah. There's another pink elephant or whatever colored elephant in the room. It's called meeting. Meeting is, when I was, it was almost 20 years ago when I joined Audi as global CMO. I was so much frustrated because my meeting calendar had 50 hours a week. So I couldn't do them all because they were overlapping. But I think I was sitting 35 to 40 hours a week in a meeting. Corona made this even worse. So I left Audi 18 years ago. So it's not the problem of Corona. But Corona made this meeting elephant even worse. We had Phil Lippen on the show, who is the founder of Evernote and now founder of a very interesting video conference add-on tool. And he told us that he managed to reduce his amount of meetings by really bringing them into a new structure. So he said, well, there's in-person, it's best for building trust. It's good for strengthening relationships, and we should use this very carefully and wisely. There's live video meetings. It's best for decisions and good for everyone wants to share thoughts. And then there's recorded video, which she says is very good used if you want to explain things, if you want to present things, because it saves time. The typical thing, you have a remote meeting and someone is presenting 45 minutes and everyone has to sit there and to see this is bullshit. And he believes recorded video is something. Interesting perspective, but I would love to learn how is the approach to meetings at remote.
Yeah, it's a very similar, actually. We use a lot recorded video. So I think having a meeting, it's essentially forbidden at remote to have a meeting to share information, right? Without there being back and forth of any sort anticipated. And so what we do is when we just are sharing or presenting something, it has to be recorded video, much more flexible, saves you all the overhead, all the benefits you can possibly imagine. So I record many videos of myself during the day. I think this is the first one today, but it's definitely not going to be the last one. And then we actively avoid recurring meetings. So it's very easy to say to each other, let's have a weekly recurring meeting. But the effect of that on anybody's schedule and like the flexibility that it removes is immense, right? Because right, like immediately the moment you decide to have a recurring meeting, so weekly it comes back every single week or every single 2 weeks, it's stuck. You cannot do anything else ever at that moment. You always have that. Now you have the overhead of managing that. And so we try to avoid recurring meetings as well. And then we have ad hoc meetings whenever we feel that they are necessary, right? And I think this is generally a good rule, which is that if all parties agree we need to have a meeting, then that's a good reason to have a meeting. But one, it should be very few participants. Nobody should ever attend a meeting without contributing anything. There's no reason, right? You can record a meeting, which many people do. And two, there has to be an agenda in advance. Mm-hmm. And so you know what to talk to, you know where to take notes together, and that the agenda has to be externally available as well. And then that's it. And then we just try to avoid them altogether. Like, I think that's the most part. I know that most of our engineers, they have maybe one or two meetings a week of 30 minutes, right? And another good way to, a good rule, heuristic to follow is just never have meetings longer than 30 minutes or 25 minutes. And then if you want to have a meeting for other reasons, like you want to hang out with someone, a coffee call, as we call it, that's a great reason to do it. But like especially scheduled and recurring meetings, we just don't do them. And then if we do them, at most once a week, but like we really, really work hard to avoid them.
I love exactly the point with the recurring meetings and the recording. I mean, we do that a lot. And here's a thing, when it comes to clients, we really need to teach them how to record a proper video. And then there are the more internal people and the more external people. For the external ones, it's easy. For the more introvert ones, it's really a big challenge. And I got quite good feedback. One of my managing directors, he's more on the introvert side, and he said like he need to learn for like years, and he's the one also challenging it for new employees. And they came back to me and saying like this put so much pressure on them, because sitting in front of a camera and said, hey, do an audio message is also fine as well, like hearing their voice and all that stuff. So we put some effort into like training it to people and teaching it to them. What is your like, let's say, five key points to, let's say, record a video where you say, here are five rules, keep in mind, do it like this to make it easy.
Yeah. The first one is know what you're going to say and say that no more, so that it doesn't become unnecessarily long. That's one of the most important ones. If you want to make 2 points, sometimes it helps to write them down. I do that sometimes, like just in keywords for yourself so you know what to hit. Never look back. Never rewatch your own video. Because the point of the video is just to transmit information, right? And so when I meet you in the hallway and I say something to you, I can't get a redo. So you shouldn't do a redo with a video either. Nobody cares. And then that's basically it. And I immediately share it. That is my tips. When I record a video, even if it's a really important one, right? For example, talking about you know, I do these regular videos talking about the performance of the company. I do these videos which are ask me anything. And so in advance, I ask people, what do you want me to tell you? And they ask me questions. And then what I do, and the way I do this, is I just press record and then I read the question and just answer them. And the reason that I do it like this is that it's the least amount of work for me. It's the most sincere. And then that way I can actually get stuff done. Like, and I actually meet the goal that I want to achieve, which is that it becomes easier for everybody involved. And so if you are going to re-report, you're wasting your own time, right? The benefit to the viewer is practically zero, right? Mm-hmm. Like the only, you might have a tendency to re-record something is because you misspoke. But if I misspeak in our conversation with each other, then I just repeat myself and you are not bothered by that. Mm-hmm. So I never go back to it. And I never edit it, right? Like that's the thing. I just press record, do the video, and then end it. Recording, editing then takes a lot of time as well. If you do really want to do really in-depth things, then it's worthwhile using like Phil's tool. It's really good for this because you can have like a floating presenting window. You can share your screen. But then again, like you can have your content prepared that you're going to show, but then just do it in one take and you just walk through it. It's the exact same thing as you do it in a video call, except people can 2x the speed and I can read the transcripts. And actually what I started to do myself and started to encourage people as well is to, if you don't want to watch a video, the transcripts usually nowadays are good enough. Just read the transcript of the video. I do this all the time. I'm on the way. I can't play a video out loud. I'm just reading the transcript of whatever somebody sold. And all of that is fine. If it's for external audiences, right? For marketing purpose, a whole different thing, but it is not, right? You're just talking about recording something for internal usages. Press record, say what you want to say, send it. And then try to keep it short. That's just like in writing. The longer something is, writing or video or audio, the less likely people are going to finish it. So especially if you're communicating to a greater group of people, keep it as short as possible. It's better to say less and then answer a question than try to be hyper comprehensive.
Wow. That's cool. Thank you.
Werbung. Dein Cloud-Account wurde deaktiviert. Bitte neu anmelden. So oder so ähnlich könnte eine Mail bei dir im Postfach heißen, aber hinter der Webseite, hinter dem Formular steckt kein Tool, sondern ein Phishing-Angriff. Betrüger kommen so an die sensiblen Daten deiner Company und unser Partner SoSafe hilft dir dabei, um das menschliche Sicherheitsrisiko bei Cyberattacken zu minimieren. In den letzten 3 Jahren hat nämlich jedes zweite Unternehmen einen erfolgreichen Cyberangriff erlebt und Firmen investieren zwar Zeit und Ressourcen in Firewall und Technik, aber 85% aller Datenschutzvorfälle sind tatsächlich auf den Faktor Mensch zurückzuführen. Und SoSafe hilft durch verhaltenswissenschaftlich fundierten E-Learning, Gamification, intelligenten Angriffssimulationen, Risikoanalysen und Auswertungen dabei, eine Human Firewall in deinem Unternehmen aufzubauen. Wenn ihr es testen wollt, auf sosafe.de/omr könnt ihr euch kostenlos für eine eigene, individualisierte Phishing-Simulation anmelden. Also einfach mal testen, wie eure Klickrate im Unternehmen wäre auf solche Mails. Bisherige Unternehmen hatten da zum Beispiel 30%. Ihr könnt gucken, ob euer Unternehmen über- oder unterbietet. Alle Infos auf sosafe.de/omr. Werbung Ende.
Let's talk about how AI will change the ways of asynchronous communication. I just signed up for the... the new Bing search, the premium ChatGPT. I experimented a lot in the company with it. I mean, writing in asynchronous communication usually used to take a lot of time. Now you have tools that help you writing really, really fast. And you talked earlier about understanding the layer underneath. So how do these parts come together and what do you see in terms of accelerating asynchronous work, or like, what do you see coming?
Yeah, I have an interesting perspective on this, but because I think that what you write down should be as short as the summary that you would get from GPT otherwise, right? Like, I think the common thought is like, well, you have these long documents which might exist, and then you get like a GPT, for example, to summarize it. But what my opinion is on this is that your documentation should be terse and very specific. And you should not use language models to add more words, right? Because it doesn't actually add the content that you want. Mm-hmm. So the way we use the remote today already in AI, which I think is like a really easy primary use case for a lot of companies over the mm-hmm. next year or two, is we have a model that ingests all our internal documentation. And then rather than it using it as a search, you can use mm-hmm. it as, I have a question and I want an answer. And that is amazing. Like, we have hundreds of thousands of pages of documentation at remote for very specific things, right? We employ people all over the world. And so we need to understand that if you hire someone in Bolivia and they go on maternity leave, how are they going to get paid out? Now, finding mm-hmm. this in the documentation can be really challenging. But if you can ask a bot, and it's what we did, what are the rules? They can just summarize it for you. And this is one of the easiest, most straightforward ways to deal with this, like, oh, we have a lot of documentation, everybody's writing it, and now I want to take content out of it. You still have challenges around, you know, making sure you write stuff down, but I would argue that you should avoid writing stuff down that is too lengthy, right? I think it should be very terse, and then have the bot just ingest it all and use that to answer things. I think that's the first and most obvious way. I think there's a million other things you can do with it, right? Like, I think it fundamentally changes the way that we're going to build products and businesses. But that one is just a really, like, pretty straightforward to implement and, like, extremely useful.
Love it.
I would make a step to the challenges that we're facing with remote or decentralized work. It's innovation and it's culture. And let me start with innovation. When we started our trip to new work, we get in contact with a case study from the 50s of the last century, which is the story of the MIT Building 20 in Boston. It was a building which was built very fast to give researchers a place to develop a new weapon for the war, to end the war. It was very cheap, and that they wanted to destroy the building directly after the war. But what happened was that the university was growing very fast, and the university had no money to build new buildings. And so they put all the overcapacity of all departments into this building. And they were allowed, because the building was ugly, to tear down walls and even ceilings, whatever. They wanted to use color and made it a nice place. And they constantly invented the first co-working space, and the building became the role model for innovation, because people were stumbling on each other and were talking. There was one rocket researcher talking to a psychiatrist, whatever. And the theory behind was, because there were so many different people had this unplanned talks, the innovation rate was so high. How do you create this moments in a remote first or remote only company? And do you believe it can be replaced with technology by 100%? Or do you think we need physical contact still to really come up with great stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I get this question very often. I don't think it has anything to do with physical contact, right? But it has to do with, like, how easy can you connect with other people? And in particular, how easy can you connect with people that are outside of your direct team or the direct project that you're working on? And so how do you facilitate that? And a building is a good way to facilitate it, because they have, you know, the same ways to enter the building and to get through the floors and a shared canteen, right? And those are ways that you bump into people. I think it's often romanticized, right? Like, I think it's an extremely romanticized idea where most organizations don't actually work like this. They're extremely focused within their own teams, whether or not they are in the same building, or, you know, if you've worked in a company and you have, where you have large buildings with multiple floors, then it's unlikely that you know most people outside of your floor, right? Like, the people you connect with are people that are closest to you. And in a remote organization, it's very, very similar. And so how do you facilitate that? It's, instead of getting it for free by having a building where people together, you have to be intentional about creating those ways that people connect outside of their teams. And You know, I would say a few things. First off, is that's doable, right? You can connect people outside of their teams if you, as a business, structure this and create moments for this. So, for example, at Remote, what we do is we randomly meet people up together and set them up for coffee calls, as we call them, right? And so every week, everybody that opts in for this gets connected to a random person around the organization. And the mandate, we usually supply an icebreaker question of some sort, but the mandate essentially is just talk with this person for a few minutes, for 30 minutes, and then that's it, right? And then you get a lot of this, right? It does it feel forced? Yeah, it is more forced than bumping into each other, but it actually works very effectively because you're continuously creating these like collisions of people rather than just the ones that happen to have lunch at the same time. So the variance there is a little bit greater, and that works really, really well. I do think that, you know, we should not act as if the future of work means that people themselves don't want to hang out with other people in person anymore. And like, I continue to believe very much that that is an important part of everybody's life, and that is what you should do, and you should hang out with people. And for you to feel that sense of community or social connection, if you can't find it in a remote setting, you should seek it out in a physical world, whether that is a co-working space, or maybe your company has offices that you could go to once in a while, or whatever other way. Right. And for me, you know, I would say my need for that is relatively low, but I get it what I get from virtual. And then now and then I meet my colleagues in person. Or in my case, my co-founder lives 2,000 kilometers away. I fly to him and we hang out for, you know, for a few days. Or my executive team, we, you know, we get together once a quarter, for example. You have to be much more intentional about it. But I don't think it's worth romanticizing the past to say, well, this is a reason not to work remotely. And I think that is where the nuance is here, right? It's like, yes, it is great to have everybody together always in the same place, but the cost of that is far too high. And if you're intentional about it, you can find other ways to bring the same kind of energy.
We know from numbers that even if it was successful during the pandemic, 70% of the companies who allowed home office like take it away currently, especially in Germany. We see examples like Apple. I mean, they have with their new headquarter, the Circle. What a building. So they bring people back.
I would work there.
Yeah. But still people want remote work and they force them back to the office. And I mean, Steve Jobs really lived that culture of like bumping into each other on campus. So there is a lot
offering them just one toilet. At the beginning.
Yeah, well, they have more than one toilet, but they still have one cafeteria, actually, with the largest free-hanging glass door on the planet. Yeah. And it takes you like at least circle the whole thing 15 minutes, so like at least 7 minutes to like get to the cafeteria if you're like all on the other way. But anyhow, that's a different story. So he really believed into this, like taking a walk. I mean, they have certain pathways in the middle of the building by intention to take a walk. And now force their people back to work. Even so far that their people were actually freaking out because they made a video that kind of made fun of them. What are your tools or the best tools when you, like you now mentioned some of them, like flying and meeting on intent, but what are your best tools when it comes to accidental collaboration virtually, like bumping into stuff? I mean, GitLab is kind of this thing where you like bump into stuff, but like to kind of build it into the DNA of a virtual company is different.
I think the one thing that, you know, Apple is trying to do is to get different people to talk to each other. And why do you want to talk them to talk to each other is because their worlds, their entire context is invisible to each other, right? Mm. Like if one person is working on an iPhone and another person is working on the Macs, those people have zero access to each other, right? Outside of work, like intentionally. So I think most remote organizations, including my own, work very transparently internally. It's very easy to have access to what other teams are doing, like their day-to-day, their actual work, up to really high-level things. And we are constantly encouraging people to share and overshare what they are doing, why they are doing, where you can find that information, how you can learn more, how you can jump into the conversation. And then we're really lowering the threshold to talk to each other, right? Either by one, making it available for anybody to access any piece of information and join any discussion. At the same time, just making it very easy to just call somebody, right? Mm. Whether it's on chat or an audio call, or you send each other a video. That's it. That's all you need to do, right? Like, you just want to make sure that the threshold to talk to each other is so incredibly low. It's so easy to find each other, and it's so easy to see what other people are doing, that people have this intent of like starting to talk, starting to interact, starting to go into each other's project or whatever else. That's it. You just want to have people talking to each other, right? And so doing that, being really transparent, making really low threshold to connect, that's one really good way. And then the second one is you want to make sure that people connect with each other as individuals, right? And there's a million ways you can do that. But again, like, it all comes back to making it very easy, right? And being somewhat intentional. And so, as I said, we randomly connect with people. We create special moments, special ways for people to hang out, be it virtually or in person. And then we really encourage that. And we have budgets available, so that if you want to meet people in person, we will pay for that, right? It's all about encouraging people to hang out, to be social together, and creating the space for that. And that's it. That's all we have to do. And then that will happen by itself.
Mm. Maybe we take now the jump to corporate culture. I think this was a very nice step into this way. You say you have budget for people who want to meet each other in person. And I think this is the other crucial thing a building can do. It can be the social anchor. So how you create social anchors and how you encourage people to meet in real life, and how do you meet people in real life? What are your hacks for this?
Well, again, like, we don't, we encourage people to do this in the context of not to work together, but specifically to be social together, right? And so we have a really clear policy that work happens online, wherever you are. We don't really care how you do your work, but if you get together, the purpose should not be to work. And we don't necessarily want need your work to be your social anchor. If you want to be transactional about the way you do work with us, that's completely fine. Like, as long as you do your work, then that's it. Like, the town square is Slack for us, right? It's chat. And like, nowadays, you have everything there. You have audio calls, video calls, and whatnot there. And that's it. And then for people to then go out into the real world, that's completely up to them. We encourage it because we are happy that people are connecting with each other, and it is fun and it is nice, but it is not necessary. And so for me personally, I do very little because I have a really busy schedule, right? I have, as a CEO, you do a lot of external meetings. So I actually do have a lot of meetings. And besides that, I have two small kids. And so for me, if I meet somebody in the real world, it's essentially like half my day is gone, right? Like, half my day of productivity. So I'm essentially sacrificing, I don't know, 10% of productivity in a week if I go somewhere in person. Actually, this afternoon, right after this, I am going to meet somebody for lunch. And this is a special thing. It's an investor, and he flew over here to have lunch together. But if it was for any other reason, I would be unlikely to do it because, one, I don't feel that need that much. And two, because the cost is so incredibly high. And like, for many companies, that is acceptable. But I think for us, the level of productivity versus time that we spend working is so high, that ratio, is that, well, if you don't want to do this, you don't feel this need, then you don't have to.
To be more precise, maybe, does this mean you don't believe in culture?
No, I think culture is the foundation of our organization. But I think what you're implying is that you need to be together to do that. When we started the company, what we did is we wrote down our core values. Our core values at Remote are kindness, ownership, excellence, transparency, and ambition. Those are still the same today. That's how we do performance evaluations. That's how we reward people. If people exhibit being particularly strong in one of those values, that is what we reward. That is what we celebrate. That's how we think about how we interact with each other. It's the very backbone of the organization, is to be kind to each other first and foremost. It's to take ownership of things. That is what defines our culture and how we interact with it. But how each individual interacts with everybody else shouldn't be based on, you know, how much they are social or how often they meet in person. No, it's about the greater whole, right? The context that we give to how we work with each other, not necessarily whether we have lunch together or not.
Thank you.
So when we start to ask you with a very deep question, and this is Monday morning, we also have something at the end that is kind of an open, quite deep question. And Michael, I guess it's your turn because I open it up.
Yeah. Our last question always is the question, where do we want to go in future?
It's another good question. We've not really discussed this, but for me, the reason that we started remote is to give anybody, anywhere, access to greater opportunities. The company is called Remote, but the point is not that it's about remote work. It's about, you know, creating a world that is more fair for more people. I believe very strongly that independent of where you live, you should have access to great opportunities. And through that, you should be able to build a great life for yourself and your loved ones. And that's why we're doing this. This is why I'm still doing this. Mm-hmm. And that is where I want to get to. And so my internal goal, and that is not a company goal, my internal goal is that we can easily help anybody on the planet do this. That is where we have to go. And we have such a long way to go. Part of that is making sure that companies start to accept remote work and do a better job of that. Part of that is helping, you know, the littlest, smallest countries in the world to be digital enough, to be stable enough, to allow individuals to work from there and still earn a great living. There's so much work to do. That's where I want to go. At least for the coming decade or so, I'll be busy with that.
Perfect. This is a wonderful closing statement. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Voll gut. Also GitLab ist mir halt ein Begriff immer schon gewesen, weil die sehr früh asynchrone Kommunikation als Begriff verwendet haben, als Konzept. Deswegen konnte ich mich da schon sehr stark mit identifizieren. Und mir geht es dann bei solchen Menschen, die das in aller Tiefe erlebt haben, immer um die Details. Also weißt du, so das, was viele an der Oberfläche beschreiben, zu sagen, okay, never relook, also never rewatch the video. Beispielsweise. Oder
ja.
Wir nennen ja unsere Ex-Meetings für Flexibilitäts-Meetings. Und er hatte nochmal gesagt, no interruption. Also, also diese Sachen. Das sind für mich die wichtigen Punkte, aus denen ich sehr viel mitnehme. Und ich fand deinen Punkt mit der Kultur am Ende nochmal echt spannend, den er aufgenommen hat. Weil ich würde auch eben challengen, dass es It's a long path, und er sagt ja auch schon, es ist ja nicht für jedes Unternehmen, ne?
Ja, aber wir haben einen Punkt haben wir vergessen, das wäre nochmal ein Ansatzpunkt, falls wir eine zweite Folge machen. Was mache ich mit Firmen, die eben große Produktionsstätten haben oder andere Städten haben? Ne? Wie kriege ich das dahin? Aber ich glaube, den Transfer kriegen unsere Hörer und Hörer hin, dass das jetzt wirklich eher für Firmen ist, die eben nicht große Produktionsstätten haben. Ich fand auch sehr gut die Details, zusammen mit den Tipps, die du mir ja schon mal für das Recorden von Videos gegeben hast, komme ich langsam auf so eine Checkliste von 10 Punkten, die super sind. Und ich fand sehr gut diesen Punkt, mach einfach was anders, wenn es intern ist, als extern. Und mach es auch durchs Vorbild. Ne? Wenn du selber auch mal ein Video schickst, wo du ein bisschen haspelst oder so, dann werden die anderen Leute auch weniger selbstkritisch und du wirst viel schneller. Ja. Das glaube ich alles. Und ich bin ja ein großer Believer in Gebäuden und sowohl für Innovation als auch für Kultur, aber mich hat das nochmal nachdenklich gemacht, ob das vielleicht nicht auch eine sentimentale Sichtweise ist. Und er hat es ja selber gesagt, viele Leute sind transaktional, vielleicht ist diese Generation auch transaktionaler, was Arbeit angeht. Und es wird Firmen geben, die so funktionieren, da bin ich ganz, ganz sicher. Und es war auf jeden
das
Fall ein neuer
auch,
Blick aufs Thema, ein tiefer Blick aufs Thema, genau.
Also letzter Satz und ich sehe deinen Punkt und ich finde nicht, dass du da in irgendeiner Form Traditionalist bist, was die Gebäude betrifft. Im Gegenteil, die haben eine Daseinsberechtigung, wenn es, und das ist der Punkt, intentional ist. Weil ich sag mal, unser Team, kann ich nur sagen, die Workspaces machen, sind die, wo es am meisten abgeht. Und die Fragestellung ist immer wieder, was wollt ihr mit dem Space? Das muss gefragt werden. Es muss intentional sein. Und ich glaube, dann ist es okay, weil es wird genug Firmen geben, die brauchen diesen Space. Allein, weil es auch nicht jeder zu Hause machen kann. geht halt nicht.
Absolutely.